Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, July the 6th, day number 188 of 2012. And today, as we do on Fridays, we're going to be chatting with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. She's a noted author and economist, and we're going to be talking about these economic reports. Not a good day for the American economy. I mean, it's a bit like a broken record. Maybe people under 30 years old don't know what I mean by that, but a broken record is what used to happen when the needle got stuck and you kept hearing the same thing over and over again. Anyway, that's what these bad economic numbers, they're just there's just too many of them, and they're consistently coming on the first Friday of each month, and it's not a good thing whatsoever. I do want to begin, though, by thanking the management of Blog Talk Radio. They were kind enough to feature our show today, which means that you'll see it on the front page, and there you can click and listen to our program. So those of you who, because of Blog Talk Radio, those of you who are listening to us for the first time, I want to thank you very much for doing that, and I hope you come back. We have a lot of different broadcasting that we do during the week. We talk to Dr. Ileana Johnson on Fridays. We usually talk about the economy and international issues. On Sunday nights, we talk to Bill Katz of Urgent Agenda. We talk to Bill usually about the week in review, domestic and foreign policy questions. And then we've begun this year, because of the election on Mondays, we talk with Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor, and we talk about the 2012 election. So these are just some of the things that we bring you, as well as other great things from time to time, like I did a show recently on Cuban food. And you're probably asking yourself, what does this guy know about Cuban food? The only thing I know about Cuban food is I enjoy eating it because my mother made it when I was growing up. But I managed to find these two ladies who are real experts on Cuban food. They have websites, and we had a lot of fun with that program as well. So thank you very much to all of you listening for the first time. We're very happy that you're joining us today. One of the things that we do on our show is that we have a little segment called On This Day in History. And today is an easy one. On this day in history, we say happy birthday to former President George W. Bush, who, as you may know, he's traveling in Africa right now, doing a lot of work in Africa. And sometimes I don't think he's gotten the credit that he deserves for all of the good things that he did for Africa. And hopefully in time, as his presidency is revisited by historians, he'll get the credit for all that wonderful work that he's done for Africa, and also for Mrs. Bush, the great work that she did with Afghanistan and promoting the interest of women in that part of the world. We're going to take a little break. We'll hear from our sponsor, and then when we come back, we'll talk to Dr. John.
Sean Collins, the owner of Legacy Credit Services, believes that improved credit equals improved lives. And that's why his company provides a money-back guarantee if they don't remove at least 25% of the negative items on your credit. With Legacy Credit Services' six-month program, they take care of everything and you only pay after it's been completed. Plus, Legacy Credit is the only credit repair company that gives you your starting credit scores from all three of the credit reporting agencies free. See for yourself at LegacyCreditServices.net.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and let's say hello to Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. How are you?
Hello, Silvio. I'm fine. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you as well. And just a little biography for some of the new listeners today. You were an economics professor in college, and you're now an author as well. So maybe you can tell folks about your newest book.
Oh, I'd love to. Liberty on Life Support contains short essays about the economy, what has happened in the last 3.5 years, and a little bit on American exceptionalism, education, and, of course, immigration.
Great.
And it is available at Amazon.com since June 6th, and it's also on Kindle for those who prefer Kindle.
Right. I'm still having a problem getting into Kindle, but I suppose eventually I will, like everything else. You get into all this new technology. But, yes, it is available on Kindle. And, by the way, on my blog, I've got a little picture of the book. So if you click on that, you can also order the book. And if you do that, you'll help me pay for my son's college loans. So I would appreciate it if you if you get the book from me and from Amazon, and that way everybody wins. But I was saying on top of the on the introduction that we had another very bad jobs report today, and this is almost becoming, it's really becoming like a broken record, and I think you know what I mean by that. And it's really bad. I mean, it's a terrible jobs report. I mean, 8.2% unemployment, that's actually the best part of the report. It's all downhill after that. 14% unemployment for blacks, for example. 11% unemployment for Hispanics. That did not change. 80,000 new jobs. But if you look at, as I said, if you look at these numbers underneath, what you find out is that unemployment has now topped 8% for 41 straight months. The last time we had something like that was back in December of 83. This is already the longest jobs recession since the Great Depression at 53 months, and this is a brand new article that just came out within the last hour at International Investors Business Daily by Mr. Ed Carson. So really, really bad news. I just don't have any. There's nothing pretty about this jobs report, Dr. Johnson.
No, it's not. I looked at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they list teenagers at almost 24% unemployment, 23.7%. As far as men and women, they're about the same, 7.8% versus 7.4%. You mentioned Hispanics. The lowest unemployment is among Asians, 6.3%. And, of course, we still have the same approximate number of unemployed persons, 12.7 million, of which 2.5 million are called marginally attached to the labor force. And that's kind of marginally meaning that they're not counted as unemployed because they had not searched for work in the last 4 weeks preceding the survey. And remember, the survey that they do is by phone, randomly done, 65,000 households each month, and then they extrapolate that to the entire labor force, which is about 156 million people. And then, of course, you have the 821,000 discouraged workers listed by the Bureau of Labor report in June, which is a decline of 161,000 from last year. And these were not seasonally adjusted. And, of course, you have the remaining 1.7 million persons who have not searched for work in the last 4 weeks for whatever reason. So I think Market Watch was predicting 100,000 jobs for June added, but only 80,000 materialized. It looks like most of the jobs added were in professional and temporary help, which was 47,000. And if you look at the first quarter versus second quarter in the year, we've averaged in the first quarter 226,000 jobs per month. In the second quarter of the year, only 75,000 jobs per month average. So that's a pretty drastic drop. And, of course, the lowest was 11,000 jobs in manufacturing. So that's it's not good at all.
No, it's not good at all. In fact, the way they calculate this thing, and we did a show on that before, it's what they call labor force participation. And if they were using the same labor force participation, I think, from just the 2008, the unemployment rate would be actually 11%. And that's why so many economists say that the real unemployment rate is actually more like 14%, 15%, which is pretty high when you consider that that basically means that almost 2 out of 10 people are unemployed. I mean, that has a tremendous impact on the economy to have that many people not working.
Well, I have an interesting quote that I found by Mr. Donald Trump. He said, quote, "The reporting requirements are so different now. You have people saying the real number is 14% unemployment and 15 and 16 by the way they used to account. And now the number is at 8.2. And you know, if you give up looking for a job, they take you off the list completely," end of quote. He told this to CNBC. "You're not counted, and I think that's probably not appropriate," end of quote. Of course, it's not appropriate. It's massaging the data. It's not correct.
That's right. And this is the problem that we say 8.2, and, you know, that still means 90% of the people are working. But when you get under those figures, it really it becomes a problem. And then, of course, at the same time that we are having these problems creating jobs, we appear to have more and more regulations. And I was listening to this morning to, I can't think of his name right now, but he's with the Wall Street Journal, and he was being interviewed, and he was being asked, you know, why are companies not hiring? And there's a great fear among employers, among companies, about some of the taxes that are coming down the road. And then, of course, we find out that, you know, Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, which is kind of a funny name, really, when you think about it, because there's nothing affordable about it,
exactly,
for the economy, at least. There's a lot of regulations and taxes built into this this new health care law. And I believe that you have discovered even more things that are in this law that are just starting to, you know, come out. I believe you said 15 reasons, right, or something like that.
Yes, I've found about 15 reasons why Obamacare is a disaster, in addition to the fact that Bush-era tax cuts will expire January 1st and other tax holidays that President Obama has put in place will expire at the exact time when the automatic spending cuts designated under the 2011 debt ceiling agreement, I don't know if you remember the sequestration,
yes, yeah,
also kicks in. So the combination of tax hikes, because that's what it is when the Bush-era tax cuts expire, it's a tax hike, and also all the Obamacare-related taxes, or many of them will kick in, and then the spending cuts at the same time could siphon off billions out of the economy next year alone, and it will definitely derail the recovery, and it's going to have a tremendous impact on the Eurozone and vice versa. If they don't resolve their issues, we are going to fall off that fiscal cliff, as Mr. Bernanke has warned us, and now even the International Monetary Fund's Christine Lagarde, the chief, urged us to address, us being the U.S., to address this fiscal cliff. But in this Obamacare disaster, number one thing that I think it's important, if the federal government now has the power to force you to buy private goods and services, now that you open this Pandora's box, what else will you be forced to buy in the future? Number two, it is another way towards a nanny state from cradle to grave. Number three, the IRS now is going to be given the task of hunting down and penalizing millions of Americans that do not have any health insurance. And the Obama administration has given the IRS $500 million extra dollars outside of the normal appropriation process to help them enforce the provisions of Obamacare, and plus they're in charge of overseeing, and that's a scary thought. Number four, there are more than 20 new taxes on the American people, and we talked about those last time. They're listed in my most recent article at Canada Free Press, or they can Google it at my website, ilianajohnson.com. There's a whole list of them. Number five, in the attempt to control costs and promote efficiency, this Obamacare or this Affordable Care bill, which is not affordable at all, is going to limit the treatment options that doctors and patients can consider. So that's going to result in a decrease in our life expectancy in the U.S. And I speak from experience, having lived under communism, because this is a form, the socialized medicine is the same type of medicine we received under communism. Number six, there's going to be a nightmarish paperwork on doctors, hospitals, and the rest of the healthcare system. And, of course, it's going to add to the cost. Number seven, the insurance premiums are going to be soaring, and they already are in many private insurers. And, of course, that's probably on purpose to force everybody into those exchanges. He was threatening, and I mean President Obama was threatening, not to sign the defense appropriation bill unless they left in there an increase in TRICARE premiums for military soldiers, which I think is shameful because they have already served their country overseas and have been maimed and were separated from their families and suffered indignity. So they should not have to do this. Their health care should be affordable. Number eight, many small businesses are going to be crushed by the provisions in Obamacare because they will have to provide expensive health insurance coverage for their employees. And obviously this has to come from labor costs. They won't be able to hire new workers. Number nine, Obamacare is going to make the emerging doctor shortage in America a lot worse. There have been surveys among doctors and other people. Potentially hundreds of thousands of doctors will leave the medical profession because of the Obamacare. And other people would not want to go into healthcare because you have to spend 12 years studying and then everybody has to make the same salary. Number 10, Obamacare has already forced the cancellation of dozens of doctor-owned hospitals because they don't want that. It's too capitalistic. Number 11, Obamacare is going to result in a much bigger federal government in order to implement all these taxes, so you're going to have new bureaucrats required. Number 12, you're going to have to wait much longer to see a doctor, and all you have to do is look at Massachusetts. The average wait to get an appointment with a doctor after it was implemented increased from 33 days to over 55 days. On a national level, it will probably be a lot worse because Massachusetts is a small state. Number 13, Obamacare has all types of provisions that most people don't even know about it. For example, here's just one example. You will have to, Obamacare will have to pay for life-saving drugs, but they are not going to pay. You will have to pay, but they will pay for life-ending drugs. They're free. Or contraceptives are free. Or Viagra is free. Number 14. So it is offered to 16 million additional Americans who will probably be on Medicaid rolls. It is offered to illegal aliens. It is offered to prisoners free. And it is offered free to Muslims. So that's another can of worms that's being challenged in court as of yesterday or the day before. There's a lawsuit filed. And number 15, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, estimates that Obamacare will add more than $1 trillion to government spending in the next 10 years.
Wow. So, my goodness. So to the listeners, please don't commit suicide because there is hope. There is hope. Maybe we can repeal this thing. I sure hope so. But this is the problem with this law, that it all sounds so good in the abstract, you know, but when you really get into the details, you know, the Affordable Health Care Act, everybody's going to get coverage. I mean, all that kind of stuff has a nice ring to it, but when you get into the details, it's obviously devastating. But I was making myself some notes here as you were going through these 15 reasons, and I just wrote down some things in reaction to what you were saying. The IRS, that's, you know, I wonder if there's even a legal issue there, because I don't know whether the IRS can legally go after people. I suppose it can, because they do whatever they're told to do, but the idea of the IRS now going after people because they don't have health insurance or whatever is maybe a little bit too much like, you know, that famous book, 1984, or whatever that book was. Paperwork, this is another big problem. I mean, we already have too much paperwork, and I think Obamacare is going to probably quadruple, if not increase it many more times than that. Shortages of doctors as well as services. Again, all you got to do is look at Canada and look at the problems they have up there. Flexibility. This is something that small businesses have enjoyed in the United States. The fact that you can start a business and you have a lot of labor flexibility, unlike in Europe and other parts of the world where, you know, you start a business and the first thing you got to do is take care of your employees before the business can make any money. But in the United States, we always had that flexibility where companies can get started and grow and then offer benefits if they wanted to. That's going to disappear. And then you mentioned about the doctors. So it is really a disaster, this piece of legislation. And as I say, we were all very disappointed when John Roberts decided the way he did. But I have a feeling, though, the more people hear about the IRS being involved, the more unpopular this law is going to get, because there's nothing more dislikable in the country, I suppose, than the IRS. So,
well, yeah, and the IRS will have direct access to your bank account. It's in the law. And then there are other unpleasant attachments to the law, such as any transaction that you make at the bank will now be charged an additional 1% tax, which goes into the coffers of the government, and many other things. And there's another, I think, 3% that also goes to the government if you sell your home, I believe, starting in 2014. And what does that have to do with health care? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. So there are lots of unsavory pieces of information in 2,700 pages that none
right.
of the legislators read. And Mrs. Pelosi said that you had to wait to pass the bill before you knew what was in it. I've never heard of such.
That seems to be happening, right?
That seems to be happening.
We're finding out what's in it now. But this is really, when you look at it, such a shameful way of legislating, to actually write a law like this, as complicated and with all the gray areas that this law has and all the unintended consequences, that they didn't have hearings and air out these things so that experts could actually talk about these things. I mean, I guarantee you that if the American people had known that the IRS was going to be that involved in this thing, I don't even think Democrats would have voted for it. I think a lot of Democrats would have reacted negatively to this, and so I just hope that we have a. I just hope we have a Republican.
I think people focused on the word free.
Well, that's it.
They thought, oh, we're just getting free medical care. Of course, let's do it. But there's nothing free. Somebody has to pay for it, and you get free insurance, but will there be people to deliver the care, and will the 15-member panel of bureaucrats that will approve your procedures, will they say yes or no? And chances are that after a certain age, you become, as the law says, a unit. You're no longer a human being.
Right.
They use a complicated formula to determine your utility to society after a certain age, so you are considered a unit, not a human being.
Right, and that's exactly right. And this is what is so tempting, and why in many ways socialism is like an addiction, because, you know, when people get addicted to something, they get addicted because they think it doesn't cost anything, and then later on the addiction and all the problems come. And so much of this socialism is that way, whether it's medicine or whatever. And here you have a law that was passed along the lines of, hey, let's be nice, let's provide free health care for everybody, and you don't have to give up your policy. And it was presented really as too good to be true. And the bottom line is that it is too good to be true. And all I can hope for, all I can hope for, is that we can defeat this thing in November and hopefully have enough time to extract all of this. Because the big problem right now after the Supreme Court decision is that a lot of this law is starting to get implemented and getting into the system. And once it gets into the system, then it takes that much more effort to get it out of the system. So hopefully we can stop it and we can change the course of history by stopping this thing. But it is really,
really bad.
I hope so, too.
I think Governor Jindal of Louisiana is refusing to enforce it yet. He's still hoping that it will be repealed with a new president with the election in November. But who is to say that we will have a new president? And I think Governor McDonnell of Virginia has also not begun implemented the exchanges,
right,
as they are required by law. So,
well, Governor Walker of Wisconsin, I understand, also Governor Scott of Florida.
Right.
I have not heard about Governor Perry, but I'm assuming that we will do the same. So a lot of states are sort of putting the brakes on this, hoping for a change in November. I'm optimistic about the change in November, and at least we
and
can...
And there's a lawsuit filed against Obamacare as of 2 days ago.
What was that? Tell me about
it's
that.
It's a 113-page complaint on behalf of Christians and Jewish U.S. citizens, because they say that the health care Obama tax is illegal as it violates the Equal Protection Clause, Due Process Clause, Establishment Clause, and Free Exercise of Religious Clause of the U.S. Constitution, since it exempts Muslim citizens and places a heavy tax burden on Christians and Jewish U.S. citizens to pay a de facto Judeo-Christian Obama tax, not only for themselves but also for the Muslim citizens who are exempt. So that's
well, why are Muslims? You're talking here about Muslim Americans, I assume. Why
yeah,
are
Muslim
they
Americans.
I mean, what is the reason for exempting them?
I have no idea. It's in the 2,700-page bill, Obamacare.
Really? Hmm.
And then there's a representative, State Representative Mike Rizzi of Oklahoma City, who is reintroducing a bill to nullify the individual mandate in this health care legislation in Oklahoma, because he says he disagrees with the Supreme Court's ruling and believes that state governments were intended to serve as a check on the federal government. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, that's
interesting.
So what you're saying is that there's going to be more litigation, I guess, of this.
Yeah,
I was under the impression that it was over. At least
the
litigation
part. It's just beginning. It's going
right.
to be litigation on steroids, because this guy, for example, feels that it's a federal overreach, and his legislation will authorize the state to resist the Obamacare, so, and to ban the enforcement of it. So it's going to be interesting. But officials have already drafted 13,000 pages of
right.
new regulations for the new Obama tax law.
Right, and that's the part that is mind-boggling. You know, 13,000 pages of regulations. I mean, that in itself should be reason enough to throw it out. I mean, for us to have 13,000 pages of regulations, I mean, that's just a nightmare. That's
and
all.
They're
that
not
is.
Even done yet.
Right,
not
I know.
Finished. That's
I mean, that's just
so far.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I tell you what, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Ileana Johnson Poe, and we have a lot to get into. Europe, another Solyndra, and a lot of other things. So let's take a little break.
Sean Collins, the owner of Legacy Credit Services, believes that improved credit equals improved lives, and that's why his company provides a money-back guarantee if they don't remove at least 25% of the negative items on your credit. With Legacy Credit Services' six-month program, they take care of everything, and you only pay after it's been completed. Plus, Legacy Credit is the only credit repair company that gives you your starting credit scores from all three of the credit reporting agencies free. See for yourself at LegacyCreditServices.net.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, July the 6th. And again, we thank our friends at Blog Talk Radio for featuring our show today. If you're listening to us for the first time, thank you so much. And I hope that you'll come back for some of our other shows. Today, we're talking to Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. She's a noted author and economist. And you just wrote a book called Freedom. Say it again.
Liberty on Life Support.
Liberty on Life Support, which is available through Amazon, and it's a collection of essays on some of the topics that I'm sure some of you who listen to the show know. Dr. Johnson is a big fan of Agenda 21, right? That's your favorite group, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's you are a real favorite member of Agenda 21 or UN Agenda 21. But really, I think that this, you know, just to wrap up our conversation about Obamacare and the economy, and the fact that the economy is stalling, and the fact that all these regulations and all these taxes, I mean, this is all related. This is not happening. It's all related, I guess, that I'm saying. And until we clear this up, either with a new president or the abolition of some of these regulations or whatever, we're just never going to be growing the way we should, Dr. Johnson.
Absolutely. We just have to clean the corruption in Washington, and the best way to do it is to replace as many congressmen and women as possible and put real patriotic and honest Americans to become representatives of we the people, as opposed to representatives of their own interests and of the military-industrial complex.
Now, let's begin with, you mentioned corruption. And speaking of corruption, one of the best examples of crony capitalism, of course, which is a form of corruption, is Solyndra. And it just seems like every Friday when we chat, there's another Solyndra. Solyndra must have a lot of cousins, a lot of brothers, because a lot of sisters, because every Friday a new one, we learn about a new one. Now, there's another one, I guess, in the state of Nevada. And
absolutely.
This is one after the other of these companies. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a geothermal energy company with a $98.5 million loan guarantee from the Obama administration, and it was highly supported, of course, by the Majority Leader Harry Reid and Energy Secretary Stephen Chu. It's much, very much like Solyndra, the California solar panel manufacturer. These people have listed tremendous net losses, and they are unable to raise new capital to survive. So it's not likely that they will survive. And then now the EPA is going after North Dakota and Texas and Pennsylvania because of the fracking and the oil shales, because we discussed this before. North Dakota is doing very well economically because of the fracking that's taking place. You do know that there was a recent study by Harvard research fellow Leonardo Mogeri, who found that the United States' incredible shale reserves represent the most important revolution in the oil sector in decades. And that was a quote from the Heritage Foundation. And, of course, the EPA now is going after them by saying that fracking poisons the environment and does a lot of bad things, and it's not a good idea. So they're really anti-capitalist, all these environmentalists, and now they have a lot of teeth with the EPA. Everybody has heard how they target wrongfully various companies who use hydraulic fracturing for supposed environmental contamination, and everybody heard, or you know, who knows, you know, what's going on. Ald Armendariz, who compared the EPA's enforcement philosophy to Roman crucifixions, and of course he resigned, but he was promptly hired by Sierra Club, which is one of the worst offenders of capitalism and economic prosperity.
That's right.
As a matter
yeah.
of fact, speaking of these environmentalists, there's a gentleman named Dr. Robert Zubrin, who just published a book, Merchants of Despair. He is a true rocket scientist. He has a very impressive vita. Anyway, he blames the severity of the Colorado fires on the western pine beetle, not global warming. It's an epidemic spread of these beetles. Apparently, they destroy 6 million acres of trees a year, and the environmentalists have refused to allow people to cut some of these trees down to control the spread and also to harvest them by loggers, because they say, well, it harms the planet. Well, actually, the beetle destroys 6 million acres a year, twice as much as the claimed deforestation in the Amazon, where loggers log 3 million acres per year. So, and of course, the fact that these beetles have killed so many trees, they go up in flames very quickly, and they're really, really thick, so the close proximity makes the fires that much worse and impossible to put out. So
right.
This gentleman calls them anti, it's not environmentalism, it's really anti-humanism. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting, because, you know, if we let people, see, this is the problem I've always had with federal bureaucrats, that they get involved in businesses, where in this case logging or in other businesses. They don't know anything about these businesses. They've never actually run any of these companies. They've never, in many cases, many of these people have never actually worked in the private sector. So then they're coming at everything from a theoretical standpoint. But as I said, none of these people has ever met a payroll every 2 weeks. They don't have a clue of what goes on in the real world, and I think the EPA and many of these organizations are full of people like that, especially when you have a Democrat president like we have now who's anti-business to begin with.
Anti-business,
you know,
anti-human. He's got a bunch of eugenicists in the White House,
yeah.
And they all subscribe to the Thomas Malthus theory from the early 1800s, who said that if we continue propagating humanity, we're going to run out of food and die exponentially. And, you know, we're doing fine. There's almost 7 billion of us, and we're doing fine, and the planet can sustain much more. But they're all subscribing to this because they want an agenda to kill off some of
right.
us, because apparently they don't want that many humans. And as a matter of fact, speaking of Agenda 21, the reproductive rights, quote unquote, that's what they call themselves, the advocates, they're really eugenicists, including our Secretary of State, were unhappy that the term did not make it into the final document coming out of the UN Rio Plus 20 Sustainability Conference in Brazil. They said that the text did call for universal access to safe, effective, affordable, and acceptable modern methods of family planning, but the term reproductive rights includes the right to abortion. And I was in the bookstore about 2 days ago, and I always like to look for Democrat material, and I found a little book with Democrat talking points. It was a handbook, and it called abortion development prevention, and it called contraceptives pregnancy prevention. I was just aghast.
Right, right. The funny thing about it is, and the truth is that, you know, of the 7 billion people in the planet, the ones who are poor and the ones who are starving, whatever number that is, it's more because of the socialist policies and the anti-property rights policies in those countries. There's a great,
of course.
There's a great Peruvian economist, I don't know if you know him, Hernando de Soto, who wrote a book, I guess he became prominent about 20 years ago when he wrote a book called The Other Path. And it was about, well, the point of that book was that in Peru, this is 20 or 25 years ago, in Peru you had two economies. You had a real economy and then you had an underground economy. And the underground economy was more efficient than the real economy. In fact, there were banks, insurance companies. I mean, the underground economy was extremely efficient because it was 100% market-driven, whereas the real economy was a disaster because it took like 700 days to start a company or whatever because of all the rules and regulations. And he has a very clear-cut solution for poverty. He says property rights and get people, you know, get people involved in capitalism, and that's how you fix poverty. It's not by increasing the number of abortions or by increasing reducing the number of people. It's by simply giving people, giving human beings, the dignity of property rights and capitalism and so on. And he makes some very good arguments along these lines. And I've always been puzzled by these people who think that the only way you can save mankind from poverty is by aborting mankind. No. The number of babies has nothing to do with poverty. You know, that's not a the right way to look at it. It's all about property rights and giving capitalism a chance to survive in many of these countries. And unfortunately, because of land reform, that has been a big disaster in many of these third world countries. Land reform, which has basically destroyed the farming communities, and that's certainly true of Latin America, where land reform has been a total disaster. Where, gee, our time is flying. This is
The environmentalists are causing a lot of the poverty themselves because they're not allowing poor people to generate cheap electricity with fossil fuels. They're forcing them to use things that are not very efficient, such as solar and wind energy, not for them in particular. And take Rachel Carson, for example, with her book, Silent Spring. She's responsible for the death of 3 million Africans each year from malaria because they're not using DDT. She said, well, there are no more birds singing. She woke up one day and didn't hear birds. And that was actually wrong. There were actually more birds because the DDT was killing some of the insects that were carrying disease that the birds were getting it from. So she was extremely wrong, and yet they banned DDT, and 3 million Africans die a year from malaria because it was eradicating a lot of the mosquitoes in many areas. And I know I grew up with DDT under communism, and we were fine. We couldn't have eaten anything if we didn't put DDT as a pesticide on gardens.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And I think a lot of these people just have these crazy ideas, but when they put them into practice, they have all kinds of unintended consequences, and that's what's happening. Well, let's talk a little bit about the European situation. You know, it seems like every week there's a new solution, and I guess, as I understand it, Germany has agreed to subsidize, if that's the right word. But has this thing been fixed? I mean, is Europe on a better road to recovery this Friday than it was last Friday?
Well, it depends who you ask. Personally, I don't think so. It's just a temporary fix. You're putting a Band-Aid on a real deep gash that needs to be sewn, stitched by a skilled physician. We're looking at France. They are doing a lot of austerity measures that Greece, Spain, Italy should be doing, or Portugal. But it's interesting, this Hollande, as soon as he was in for 2 days, he imposed all these tax surcharges for oil and financial companies, for anybody who makes over a million euros has to pay 75% tax. They were asked, or actually they were told to pay taxes early this year. It's really interesting. They imposed a one-time contribution tax. If you had 250 million euros or more revenue, you had to pay the tax early. You have to pay a 30% tax on stock options, and I really think this stuff is coming here.
Right.
It went up from 14%. Just very severe, interesting measures. But he took a pay cut himself, and he ordered all the politicians to do the same. So that's going to be interesting how that's going to play out, because it's by a third. So that's a significant amount. They were making a little over 14,000 euros a month. Now they have to live, poor people, with about 9,900 euros per month.
Which is what, $10,000, I guess, or more than that?
Oh, it's actually more than that. Depending on the exchange rate, I would say about $13,000 something a month.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about France is that, there's a story about France that many of the rich people are taking their money out. There's a certain Capital Flight going on. And again, that shouldn't be surprising because, you know, the rich people are saying, we're not, you know, we're already paying.
We're not stupid.
Yeah, I mean, we're already paying very high taxes, right? So what's the point? So I think France has really gone a couple of steps backward here by what they decided in that election
a few weeks ago. A quick story about that. One of our famous Hollywood actors was being interviewed by a French television station, and he was being asked how he felt about taxing the rich. They should pay more. And he said, yeah, I agree. They should pay more. They have plenty of money. And the guy said 75%. And you should have seen the expression on this actor's face. It was precious because they talk a big game, but when he heard 75%, oh, don't touch my money. So it was interesting. But in Eastern Europe, communism is coming back. In Hungary and Romania alike, they have governments that are fighting very hard to do away with the constitution with any democratic gains since the fall of communism in 1989. So the communists are really, really coming back strong, and we don't know what's going to happen. There's going to be voting in November, for example, in Romania, but they think this guy is destroying so much of the constitution and of the way the government is set up. They don't know if they will be able to vote him out. He's the prime minister, and he's actually trying to oust the president of the country. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, it looks like the more things change, the worse they get. But I was just going to say that there's two things that don't seem to improve every time we talk on Friday. One is the U.S. economy and the European economy, and I think, well, especially in the case of Europe, I think their situation is so much more worse than ours because their problems are 10 times worse than our problems because they're so much further ahead. I mean, in many ways, and we've mentioned this on other shows, Europe in many ways is like the ghost of the future. The ghost of the future for many Americans. If you want to see where we're headed, where we may be headed, we don't have to go that way, but that could be where we end up with the United States, who looks a lot like Europe. Well, we got a couple of minutes left, and I know you you write a great deal of articles. I thought maybe if you could share with us one article this week that you published and you would like to tell our readers about or our listeners.
Well, the one article, the latest one I did, was on our recent storm we had in D.C., the derecho storm, which in our southern parlance, those are straight-line winds, and they weren't really that powerful, 60 to 80 miles per hour, but it literally paralyzed the area, and according to the three power companies in the neighboring states, Maryland, and Virginia and West Virginia, it caused catastrophic results to the grid. And I think that has happened because the smart grid doesn't really work as well as they thought it would. We've had straight winds in the south, and we survived because we had the old patchwork system. And some people had electricity and others didn't, and people helped each other. But here, just life came to almost a complete standstill. And I think Newt Gingrich was tweeting that people are getting a mild taste of what a solar flare or an EMP or electromagnetic pulse might do to the so-called smart grid. So that was kind of interesting. That was the article that I wrote latest. But I wanted to give one positive news, which is not in my article, but I think it's important. The New Hampshire legislator passed a law against, actually it overrode Governor John Lynch's veto. So it is now one of 11 states to offer scholarships for underprivileged students to attend private schools through tax credit scholarship programs, and also to children who are homeschooled. So that's a real victory against some of these terrible public schools that are being run by National Education Association.
Absolutely.
So
that's a big step forward because go ahead and finish.
So it's a very, very good news, and I'm really proud of New Hampshire for doing that. Families are going to get scholarships at, on the average of $2,500 per student, and they will cap at $6.8 million for the first year, but it will grow by 25% in the subsequent year. So that's great news.
Right.
On still education front, the Obama administration has now agreed to, not only are they no longer deporting 1 million young illegal immigrants, but they're giving them $6 million to cover the education costs of migrant students. So that
That's
was
amazing.
Kind of interesting. That was a deflator of the good news.
Well, the one thing that also there is in consideration related to illegal immigrants under consideration, I think under discussion in the California legislature, is the idea that California would in essence become a sanctuary state for illegal immigrants so that they can go there and not have to face any immigration, deportation, or whatever. I don't know how they can do it. I mean, I suppose they could pass it, but it would probably be challenged. I mean, it would turn the entire state into a sanctuary, which is, I think, that would be a disaster in many ways, including the rule of law. So hopefully that will not that will not develop. But one thing I did want to say about vouchers and scholarships for young students or underprivileged students or whatever is that this is one of the areas where the Republican Party can actually make inroads with black populations and Hispanic population or Hispanic voters or black voters, because if many, many in the black community and the Hispanic community, they are the victims of these black public schools in the inner cities.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
And they're the ones who I think understand how bad these schools in the inner city are, and they're looking for opportunities. Serious parents are looking for opportunities to get their kids out of these schools and into schools. One more note about that, and then we'll have to wrap it up.
Since we're speaking of education, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, here in Texas, for example, it costs about $6,600 a year to educate a kid in the public school system. And my point has always been, why not give the parents a voucher equivalent to $6,600 and let them figure out where their kids go to school? If they want to keep them in the public school, that's fine, but create a little competition. I think a little competition would probably help the public schools quite a bit. But if you've got one more and you can do it
yes,
in about a
on
minute.
Yes, on a positive note. Yes,
good,
I can.
Good, that's always
Governor
good.
Walker, he's my hero again. He breaks new ground in higher education. He wants to have to offer or create degrees at the University of Wisconsin. It's called Flexible Degree Program, which allows students to start classes anytime they like, work at their own pace, and earn credit for what they already know. And students can use knowledge obtained on the job through free open courses or anywhere else to quickly test out of a module or a course. A student may move ahead as soon as he or she can prove content mastery. So the education can become more affordable and more customizable. I think it's a great idea. The knowledge will be assessed and credited. I think it's a higher education revolution. But the best part of it is that the cost of a college credential will plummet, but the quality of instruction will not go down. And last but not least, it will destroy that tenured crystal palace of the academic professional elitism that is so hard to penetrate, that it's almost exclusively progressive.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. And Governor Walker he's a step ahead of the game in so many areas. I mean, he is truly a dynamic reformer in Wisconsin. So we wish him the very best and hope that people support him up there based on the recent election.
I wished he was our president. I wished he was running.
Well,
I would vote for him yesterday.
Well, don't overlook one possibility. I mean, he could be the vice president. I think that could be a possibility, because
that would be great.
Well, I think if you consider, first of all, where he's from, Wisconsin, that's a key state, and the region, and the fact that he's a reformer, I think all of these things could actually work in his favor. But that's going to do it for today. I want to thank you so much for joining us as
well,
you do on
you,
Fridays.
Sylvia.
And best of luck with your book. What's the name of the book again?
Liberty on Life Support, Amazon.com.
Liberty on Life Support. All the listeners out there, check out the book. I think you'll enjoy what Dr. Johnson has to say, and you get a little bit of it here on Fridays when we speak. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
And we'll
until
talk to you
time.
Later. Yes. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. Sylvia Canto on Friday, July the 6th. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. I had a great time, as always, talking to Dr. Eliana Johnson-Poe. We got into this jobs report, which was a disaster. I mean, there's nothing pretty in this jobs report. And when you really break it down and you start looking at different parts of the economy, 14% unemployment rate in black America. That's almost twice as much. I mean, that's 8.2 is the national average, 14%. Or for black America, it's probably a lot higher than that for young people. I don't have the figure, but I'm sure it's a lot higher than that. 11% for Hispanics. So when you look at these two groups, black Americans and Hispanic Americans, and you look at these two groups, and then you look at polling evidence that says they're going to vote for President Obama, you really have to ask yourself the question, do these people, I mean, are they voting for President Obama because they don't know how bad Obama has done his job, or is there another reason? Because there's just no way that he could enjoy this kind of support from black Americans or Hispanic Americans if they were literally voting on a question of results. I mean, the results are not there, and yet he continues to enjoy these levels of popularity. I don't get it, okay? I really don't get it. And I think it's time for some black leaders to start demanding better results, Hispanic leaders as well. Better results from this administration, because they're not there. The results are simply not there. We also spoke a little bit about all the regulations. We had 15, Dr. Johnson went through 15 different reasons or 15 different things that are wrong with Obamacare. I thought that was extremely, extremely interesting. And then, of course, another company, another Solyndra. You know, Solyndra must have more brothers and sisters than anybody in the world, because it seems like every Friday we're talking about another company. And again, I don't have a problem with these companies, that this is happening in the private sector. If people are investing their own money however they do it in the private sector to start these companies and they fail, hey, that's what the private sector is all about. But when you're using tax dollars to finance these companies, and then you look into these companies and the owners, the people behind these companies are often Democrat contributors, people who've contributed to the campaign, then this becomes that terrible crony capitalism that is not very good for the country. So that's another thing that this administration is going to have to explain. You know, they're getting on Mitt Romney because of his record at Bain Capital. Look, at least at Bain Capital, Mitt Romney was using money that was raised privately and private investors who would invest in his projects. Solyndra and all these other companies are tax dollars that are being used by the Obama administration to offer loan guarantees and, in some cases, direct investments in companies run, in many cases, by high-level Democrats and contributors to his campaign. So I see a big difference between the two, between what Bain Capital is doing and what the Obama administration is doing. Again, thank you so much for listening to our program today. Our thanks again to Blog Talk Radio for featuring our show. And this is Sylvia Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you the next time. Goodbye, everybody.
Mm-hmm.